This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown, and the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
It's time for Ben's Vision.
Our mission starting this spring is to win and to win now.
Projecting how the Bears roster will take shape under new head coach Ben Johnson.
Ben's vision is going to be principal.
These are the type of players that I need. That's the vision.
If it doesn't fit Ben's vision, are you willing to move on from certain guys?
Really enjoy hearing Ben's vision.
Current roster, free agents, and the draft.
Our entire organization's fired up about Ben Johnson and his vision for winning football.
Ben's vision.
This offense will be calibrated with Caleb in mind. This is not simply a dropping of a previous playbook down on the table and starting there. Nope, we're ripping this thing down to the studs, and we're going to build it up with him first and foremost, and then with the pieces around him next.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We like to look at what the new head coach might be into doing as he builds up this team. What's his vision? What's Ben's vision for all sorts of positions around the football program?
And in this case, we talk also about Dennis Allen's vision. What kind of defensive ends does Dennis Allen want? How many does he usually roster in his defenses in the past as the man with the Saints? So do they have enough? You can never have enough, though, edge rushers, can you?
You can never have enough people who rush the quarterback.
Jason Lee just said it to us yesterday. Like, after quarterback, is it the number one skill that you want to have somebody or a few people really good at on your football team? It might be the number one after quarterback.
Usually that's what they say, is that you go get the quarterback, then you go get the person who gets the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a good way to start thinking about how you're putting a draft together. So I don't think that they should consider themselves done with Dayo Odingbo. I don't think that they should be like, oh, problem solved.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Because his production from a pressure standpoint, solid. His production of getting the quarterback on the ground, not as solid. So you still have to go out there and try and find people that are gonna make life for Montez easier.
Mm-hmm.
And we see what he looks like when there's a better group around him.
Yes, for sure. And you know, it's interesting because when you think about Dennis Allen's defenses and the people that have like dominated in sacks in the history of the New Orleans Saints, it's often been outside linebackers. It's not necessarily your classic defensive end. You're thinking of your big body defensive end, because Dennis Allen is a guy who attacks with a lot of different people and uses deception and confusion to get to the quarterback instead of just letting the front four do their job and hope his DNs are great.
He's a really good equalizer because he understands the confusion that you can cause an offensive line and the confusion that you can cause a quarterback by making things look like there's something else. So you can see, well, they're showing that there's four defensive linemen and there's a regular 4-3 front, and then the defensive ends drop out.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's questions if you're the tackles, like, wait, what just happened? Who's rushing? Who am I supposed to pick up? That's where you can equalize some of this stuff if you don't have it. But it would be great and ideal to have a front four that could just do work, and then you could get super exotic on when and how you blitz.
I don't think Dennis Allen was unhappy with Cam Jordan getting double-digit sacks multiple years on his defense in New Orleans. He's not unhappy with a 6'4", 287 defensive end who's like been the dominant pass rusher on that team for all these years. Let's hear from Ryan Poles, who talked about this defensive line in February and talked about what he still might be looking to add to it.
There's strategy to that, but I would probably argue and say if you get a good pass rusher in free agency and you draft a good pass rusher, you can't have enough good ones. I think we all watched that last game of the season, and that proves to be true. So, but yeah, you want to see how you can put the puzzle together where you can kind of fill all the needs perfectly. Sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, he's right about the last game of the season too. The idea of being able to get after it with your defensive line to cause havoc with the guys up front and then drop seven. And go, even the best quarterback in the league was sitting there like, where... there's no pocket there, and I don't mean a pass pocket. There's no pocket for me to throw the ball. Everything's covered, and this guy is sitting on my head. Like, you have all of that stuff that if you have a strong defensive line, you can make hay.
Ben Johnson, whose vision matters, was talking about the early days once he had taken over, about he and his people meeting with Ryan Poles and his people and talking about what they need from certain positions.
We spent time every single day since I've been in the building, just me and him with his group, me with my group, and you know, it's been between the scheme, talking about prototypes and what that looks like for each position group. That's me sitting in with some of the preliminary draft meetings and getting a feel for how they operate. I've got a lot of respect for his crew, that group of scouts. They've done a phenomenal job this fall collecting information and really starting to set that board for when it is time to pick those players. I feel strongly about that process, and it's been a day-by-day, week-by-week process getting on the same page, but it's been very good so far.
I'm so happy to hear this because it kind of goes with my working theory that has not been proven yet, but I'm still gathering data on it, that this is more of a partnership than the previous regime. That you now have a head coach that I think in some cases is walking Poles through the tape and saying, this is what I like.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Dennis has told me he wants. This is where this guy fits this role that we want to use and can do it immediately if you're thinking about drafting him.
Absolutely. And you want that. You want that at every spot. You want this guy to be telling you what he wants, and for Ryan Poles to be taking that in and adding that in to his own soup as he's thinking about it. Aiden Hutchinson. Ryan, we've had a guy in Detroit who's been pretty good for a couple of years. Maybe you know him, Aiden Hutchinson. I'd like you to find that. Okay, good. Thanks. I'm going to go back to look at the offense. Go ahead and take care of that.
Finding one of those is... Man, I hope that he is fully recovered. And I mean this just as a fan of football.
Just watching excellence. Watching a dude with those tools who has that motor to go along with.
And he still hasn't quite figured it out yet. And he's close. He's real close to figuring it out. And once he does, it's going to be a problem for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the athleticism, the lean that he has on his pass rush, the destructive nature of what he can do, how he doesn't fall for the banana in the tailpipe on screens and is athletic enough to then get back and be a problem if you're trying to screen it out. I hope that he's good to go because I'd like to see him back to full strength and what his career might end up being.
We did interior defensive line and talked a lot about that for a Ben's Vision a little while back, and we've talked to some great folks about it. And in talking to Alex Brown, the former defensive end for the Saints when Dennis Allen was there as a defensive backs coach.
Fourth all-time in sacks for the Bears. You have to make sure you say fourth and not top five because he doesn't want to be known as fifth.
That's right. He's very particular about that. We looked at it. Who's fifth? He's ahead.
Wale, I think, is fifth.
He's ahead of Wale.
And it's someone else who's tied with Wale.
Yeah, but he was only behind three Hall of Famers, if memory serves.
That is correct.
Right. So it's Urlacher.
He's a ways behind them.
Sure. But he's right there.
And he's glad that Khalil Mack is not back in a Bears uniform because I think Khalil was like seven or eight sacks behind him.
Oh, that's tremendous.
So it works out well. Anyway, we talked with AB about Grady Jarrett and how that opens up opportunities to maybe move Jervon Dexter a little bit.
I think you still can hope that Dexter Sr. can continue to move forward and be that guy in the middle. But you also bring in a veteran that can actually teach him and help him along, a guy that is built for a gap-style defense. Like, he's shooting a gap. He's getting upfield. When he's healthy, he is a monster, and he's a problem for any offense to have to deal with. So having that problem in the middle, now it helps our edge rushers. So it helps out Sweat. It helps the opposite end. It helps on blitzing where the quarterback can't step up into the pocket. So you want those guys in the middle. I mean, we had Tommy Harris, Tank Johnson, Ian Scott. Yeah, those guys that can get up the field in a hurry. And that's what you get, I think, in a 10-year veteran like Grady Jarrett. So I'm glad we made the move. I'm glad he's coming to Chicago. I think he's going to be a huge help, not just his productivity, but helping some of the young guys, and especially Dexter on that defensive line.
Mark Anderson had 12 and a half sacks in a season where Tommy Harris, the three technique, was healthy. He did so well that Alex ended up losing his job to Mark Anderson, which made him angry. Actually, made him grumpy, which is the shirt that he wore at training camp the next year.
Oh, God.
It just was grumpy, like the from Snow White and the Seven Doors.
Oh, okay.
You're just wearing that it's around
represented.
Olivet Nazarene, that entire training camp.
That's hilarious.
But because Mark Anderson struggled against the run, and Alex took a lot of pride in being able to play the run, even as an undersized defensive end, Alex ended up getting his job back.
How about that? So that year when Anderson explosively has that sack count, that's with Tommy in the middle, like Grady Jarrett could be, and that's with Ogunleye on the other side.
Yep, you got Tommy, you got Tank, you got, I mean, they're rotating it. Was Dusty here too by then?
But point being, you got like a really good free agent D end like Ogunleye, which frankly feels a lot like the Montez Sweat trade and acquisition. Talked about that directly when Montez got here and what that can do for a defense. And now if you're adding a really good three tech, then you know maybe it can just be a raw pass rushing talent that gets it done for you on the edge, which takes us to the draft, because they got to get one, and I'm cool if it's at 10.
All right, so let's see if we can find one. By the way, I feel like I saw Matt Miller on TV yesterday. Did I see the Guagi hat?
Dudes, ladies, listeners, the Guagi hat has landed. No. What? Guagi hat has landed at Matt Miller's house.
You guys heard of Guagi? Go up and get it, guys.
It's landed there. I've got a picture. It's glorious. It's sitting on top of a football in his background. But then he was on television on, what show is it, Lawrence? One of those ESPN shows where they talked football.
I think it's NFL Live.
Oh, yeah, which is hosted by Laura Rutledge.
It's not hosted by not Laura Rutledge, to be clear. And I took a picture of Matt Miller on that show and sent it to him and said, I'm fixated on your background. As we should be doing our show, but all I'm doing is watching your background. He said, quote, I have to move it. It didn't show up like I expected. The Guagi hat didn't show up in the background like I expected. All I said was, it's a long draft buildup season. So keep watching. Anytime you see Matt Miller on your TV talking draft, look behind him for a Guagi hat and feel free to tweet at him that he should move it into a higher profile spot.
But he was on this radio show talking about defensive ends and trying to figure out ways that the Bears could, I don't know, maybe end up with Abdul Carter.
So it's a great defensive end class. I have six guys with first round grades right now. Here's a fun like slash crazy scenario for you. Okay, let's say Cam Ward goes first to the Titans. Shedeur Sanders goes second to the Browns. Would you trade up for Abdul Carter? You had two second round picks. Checked a lot of needs.
I would.
And it's not going to be as expensive to trade up for a non-quarterback.
I would, like, but I'm crazy about him. So
I am too. He's my number one player in the draft. So I'm like, and I agree with you. Even with adding Deo and you have Montez Sweat, like, I still think the defensive end could be an early-ish need here, right?
Yes,
just because
yes.
the way teams are building. So, like, if Abdul Carter, I don't think he would make it past New England at four because I think Vrabel would draft him. But, like, if that scenario's there and the Giants are panicking, you know, it's like a full-on Kevin Costner draft day moment and the Giants are panicking, I would absolutely try to trade up to take him. Now, take that scenario off the dreamland table here. I think Mykael Williams from Georgia could be there at 10. Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M probably had a good enough combine that he's put himself ahead of where the Bears are at. I think the Jets at 7, the Panthers at 8, the Saints at 9 are all certainly in play for him. The weird thing is there's a drop-off after that, and it becomes some guys with some character questions. Mike Green from Marshall, it was disclosed at the combine that he was accused of sexual assault once in high school, and then a separate time while he was at Virginia, which led to his dismissal there, and he ends up at Marshall, leads the FBS in sacks last year. James Pierce from Tennessee, I was doing ESPN National Radio a week ago, and Ian Fitzsimmons asked me about him, and Fitz said that the folks at Tennessee wouldn't even let them talk to James Pierce last year. As they were embedded with the team, they were keeping him away from the media. So those two guys, I know you're going to see a lot of them in mock drafts. Man. I don't think they go anywhere close to the top 10, though.
Wow.
Are you mad at all if the Bears in a year where it's stand pat or trade down, if they traded away some future capital and came away with Abdul Carter, would you be mad?
I don't think I could be mad.
I don't think I'd be mad at all.
I don't think I could be mad. Like, after signing all these free agents, what if they gave up one of those 2 seconds? What, they got 37 and 41?
Yeah.
If you give up either 37 or 41 to move up, does that get it done for a non-quarterback?
I'm guessing a four
next year, too.
A second and maybe a one swap?
Yeah, you might. I'd probably give up one of those seconds because that's exactly what you need and who you need. And this guy looks like he could be Micah Parsons. Here's the problem. He talked about...
Mike Green?
Yeah, but he talked about both James Pierce Jr. and Mike Green. Mike Green, who led FBS in sacks and has this tremendous talent, he'd absolutely dominated with, like, elite pass rush grades, elite run defense grades, absolutely dominated while at Marshall. And as Matt Miller said, accused of sexual assault once in high school and once again at Virginia. And he spoke to this at the combine.
It didn't go well.
It didn't go well. So listen to Mike Green and see if you feel like this is a talent you want to invest in as he tries to tell you why he left Virginia and ended up at Marshall in terms of these allegations.
What did happen that caused you to leave?
Accusation.
The accusation
of sexual assault that I've never been questioned about, that nobody ever investigated. No, I've never been charged with anything, and I'm just going to continue to stick to my process and just tell the truth and how it is.
There's two. One in high school and one in college. What?
And at Virginia, it was an anonymous report, so no, that it was no, it was nothing that came up out of it. There's no questions that even been asked of me. Out of high school, yes, they did do their due diligence, and they end up just closing the case. Yeah, there's a lot of talk out there. And it's just a bunch of people that really don't know what actually happened. I've never done anything wrong. I've never been charged with anything. My main focus right now is just telling these teams everything that they need and want to know. It's just a little frustrating just seeing online that everybody just has everything to say, and that's not the case. And so. I'm just going to continue to stick to the process, and I'm confident in myself and the way I've been handling this process, so that's going to keep on doing.
I think the last, like, 20 seconds of that is better than the first minute of that, but still, that feels like a situation where you have to be prepared for that walking into the combine, and your agent has to have you ready to answer that question or not answer that question.
Are the Bears in a place where they can take a risk on a character question like this? I must say, a couple years ago, I was a guy not wanting them to do it on Jalen Carter, which is a different situation, different concerns, obviously. And, you know, people died in that one, and it was a different situation, obviously. But in terms of character, like, I didn't think the Bears had an infrastructure in place. Do they now? Do you feel better about the infrastructure now? I think you have to.
Yeah, I would say that you're in a much better place now because there's the leadership aspects of just the free agents that you brought in.
Grady Jarrett will be right there with him.
And Joe Tooney. You know what I mean? Like, you brought in guys on both sides of the ball.
And you've got Montez Sweat, who's already been here.
Right. So you're in a better place probably to absorb it.
We didn't have Fletcher Cox when it came time to draft Jalen Carter.
I still think they probably should have, but whatever. That's gone. But with this guy, the due diligence has to be really strong. Because there's some alarming stuff, like, just in how he answered the question, that if I'm Ryan Poles, I'm not comfortable. Like,
and you got to be prepared for the PR hit aspect of it. Because if this guy's just going down the deny thing forever, if that's what he's going to do, you better find out whether people are going to come out of the woodwork and say, by the way, why did you draft this guy? I've got this email here. I've got this affidavit or whatever.
But the crazy part is that you just don't know. And you can look at the Justin Tucker stuff and be like, there's a guy who was the emblem for a great citizen. And then you find out, horrible citizen. You just don't know.
But if you know up front.
You can start to prepare yourself. So
still worked out. Like, the Chiefs knew some stuff about Tyreek Hill up front and decided to go for it, and with an infrastructure in place and to deal with the PR hit, and that all ended up working out pretty well from their perspective.
My thing is I know that I've seen him do individual drills and stuff, and there's impressive tape on him. With Jalen Carter, the argument with Jalen Carter was he is the number one player in the draft.
And you got a chance to get him at 10. This guy might be worthy at 10, but might go 25.
He's probably DN 2, 3, or 4.
Right.
Are you willing to do that for that player?
That's a very different contextual situation where Jalen Carter was player number 1 and you could have got him at 10.
Yep. We need to take a break. When we come back, a little bit more Bears for you. I had this really interesting conversation this morning with Spice Adams, and then it ended up drifting into us talking about the Bears. I'll share a little bit with you and want to let Speaks hear what he thinks about what the Bears have done. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Paul Charchian, Fantasy Football Hall of Famer.
That guy must really know what he's doing.
Director of Guillotine Leagues at FantasyLife.com.
Dan, I think you're really underestimating the broad sexual appeal that I have.
A texter says you just put the fantasy back in fantasy football.
Your guide through the waiver wire.
Hurry, step right up and keep following the leader.
Charge. With Bernstein and Harris on 670 The Score.
So, yeah, Paul Charchian. People, don't worry. He's not coming for your fantasy lives. That's not what this is about. But Paul Charchian is the director of Guillotine Leagues at FantasyLife.com. You can find him on the artist formerly known as Twitter, at Paul Charchian. That's PaulCharchian. Paul is here to talk about football, like the real thing, not the fantasy thing. And the reason is because he is a diehard Minnesota Vikings fan. And I just want to read one thing that Paul Charchian tweeted of late that I shared with Layla yesterday that she found to be hilarious. And Charch, I really appreciate you joining us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. And Charch, I feel like you were a little bit in your feelings just a little bit when you typed out what I'm about to read here. So, right. If I can get to come up. It was basically about... Oh, here we go. It was basically about Aaron Rodgers and how you felt about him in general. So, there's talks, of course, that maybe the Vikings are going to bring in Aaron Rodgers. And that was dismissed.
Yes.
And you said, quote, the only way, and only is in all caps, by the way, the only way I want Aaron Rodgers in Minnesota, he understands he's the backup and embraces that role in all facets. He's paid accordingly. No media availability when he doesn't start. Otherwise, hard pass.
Yes. And fortunately, I'm not going to have to worry about it, I don't think. And I don't know that Aaron Rodgers would agree to any of those terms. And really, I would add another bullet point to that. We're not bringing in Randall Cobb. We're not bringing in Alan Lazard either. So let's get that out of the way here as well. But Minnesota was always a very unlikely destination. They drafted J.J. McCarthy 10th overall last year, and the plan was to run give Sam Darnold a lot of run, even if J.J. McCarthy was healthy last year. The plan was to start Darnold and see where that went, and he would have been the starter all year. And they're going to go to J.J. McCarthy, and I'm glad. And I don't think any team is excited to have Aaron Rodgers at this stage. You know, Bears fans wouldn't be. Viking fans weren't. We didn't want him. And unless J.J. McCarthy is just a grade A bust, and we don't know yet, I don't see a future for Aaron Rodgers in Minnesota, happily.
Well, this brought up, Church, a lot of questions that we had when it just came to the choice that Kevin O'Connell made, because multiple reports said that this really came down to whether or not KOC wanted Rodgers on the Vikings. Rodgers wanted to go there. I joke that he wanted to complete the Brett Favre career arc because it seemed eerily similar, given that the Jets and Packers had already happened. But also, yes, I think it says a lot about how much confidence O'Connell has in J.J. McCarthy. He's built a brand where you can't question his opinion on a quarterback and what he thinks he can do with him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And nice to talk to you again, Layla.
You too, Charge. Good to see you.
Kevin O'Connell's track record, you know, it's not long, but it's awfully good. So when he inherited Kirk Cousins, he put Kirk on the best seasons of his career. And then immediately when Kirk leaves Kevin O'Connell, he gets benched. That, and granted, there was an Achilles tear rupture in there. So, you know, in fairness, there was also that. And then what he did with Sam Darnold, remarkable. Sam Darnold wins comeback player of the year. This is a lot because of what Kevin O'Connell can do. Now, here's what nobody's talking about that you'll have some insight on ahead of time. There are people who believe, and in positions to know, this is not direct from me, this is other people. Kirk Cousins would rather be a backup for the Vikings than the Falcons. And there is a scenario where Kirk Cousins ends up being the backup. Vikings haven't signed a backup quarterback yet. They don't have somebody behind J.J. McCarthy, and J.J. McCarthy is still very much a wild card. So why would the Vikings have gone this long without a backup quarterback, unless maybe they had something working in their back pocket where they knew that there was an opportunity to get Kirk Cousins later down the road after teams have already settled all their compensatory picks, right? Because you don't want to have an offsetting compensatory pick and all that garbage. So they wait long enough to get past that, and then Kirk Cousins back to Minnesota as a backup. It's a real possibility. It could happen.
Now, here's the thing, though, Charge, is that I understand that because Kirk Cousins made it past a certain date on the calendar, he's entitled to a $10 million roster bonus. That doesn't seem something another team would necessarily want to take on.
Well, not necessarily, but the Vikings have the money now. They've been cash strapped for years because of Kirk's contract, ironically, and now they're sitting about $30 million under the cap. So they could put some of that just towards Kirk and have the confidence of knowing that they've got a backup quarterback who intimately knows this system in case McCarthy gets hurt or just isn't good or whatever. Now, granted, Kirk looked pretty bad for long stretches last year, but maybe another year off the Achilles or whatever as a backup, he'd be great, and he'd be a really good mentor for J.J. McCarthy, from a personality standpoint.
So that brings us to our question, really, that Layla presented yesterday. Layla, hit Charge with this, because I have an opinion, you have an opinion. I want to know what Charge's opinion is.
So we were wondering out loud about it once we started thinking of all the names, you know, the talent that the Vikings have, how quarterbacks would want to work with them. Like, I don't think Aaron Rodgers wants to work with Alan Lazard as much as he'd want to work with Justin Jefferson, for example.
Jordan Addison.
That is of no shade to Alan Lazard. It's just Justin's one of the best in the league. And then we started started thinking, if you're a second-year quarterback, these are two very interesting scenarios to be in. Crazy that they're in the same division. When you consider that second-year J.J. McCarthy is essentially playing his rookie season, but he's surrounded by an outstanding and proven level of talent and a coach who just took somebody into the comeback player of the year, as you said. Or you could be Caleb Williams in your second year, but you've got a year under your belt on the field. But however, you're dealing with perhaps learning some bad habits, but you've got Ben Johnson. So in your opinion, Charge, which second-year quarterback has the better scenario?
Well, okay, I'm going to preface this by saying I love the Bears offseason. I, you know, did exactly what you needed to do, reinforcing the interior of the offensive line, you know, Tooney, Dalman Jackson, great signings. That looks like it. I don't think you're going to miss Keenan Allen, and Olamide Zaccheaus will walk into that spot and he'll be about as productive anyway. And you figure Roma Dunze gets better in his second year. DJ Moore is already really good. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things in place in Chicago, and it's a really good spot. You're going to get such a good read on Caleb Williams through this year. But Minnesota is coming off a 14-win season with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. They needed help on the interior of their offensive line. They got Ryan Kelly, one of the best centers in the league. They got Will Fries. He's going to be very good and already was really good. They already were set at tackle. So I just feel like Minnesota is just a more proven and well-rounded roster, but both really, really good spots. Now for your Bears, if I can just make a slight lateral move here, because I can't wait to see what you do at running back in this draft. Oh my God. I don't think pick 10 will be running back unless Jenty falls there, but that second round pick as a running back could be an absolute star in your system. And with Ben Johnson, if Caleb Johnson as a possibility would be a really, really tantalizing fit in your offense with that second round pick. You got like what, pick 7 or something in the second round, 39 overall, I think.
Yeah, they got 4 in the top 72. So there's, you know, that also adds to the depth that they have early.
I'll say this, Charge. I think it's the Bears because Caleb Williams has played football before in the NFL and J.J. McCarthy is not. And I think that that overrides what you were talking about. I understand the 14-win thing. I really do. And I understand that the Vikings have addressed their issues much in the same way the Bears have. But at the end of the day, J.J. McCarthy's got to get actual NFL reps. And so for me, it's a no-brainer because while Ben Johnson is being tasked to do something he's never done before and being a head coach, he's been drawing up plays for the last whatever. And his offenses have been juggernaut-like.
Yeah, that is totally fair. J.J. McCarthy's a massive wild card, right? But you know, if what he did at Michigan is at all representative of what he's going to do in the NFL, the prospects here of success. I mean, how many first year starting quarterbacks get to drop into a better spot than what the Vikings have provided for J.J. McCarthy? He's going to have to be really bad to not be able to get the ball to Jefferson and Addison and TJ Hockenson. And with all of everything that Kevin O'Connell has already proven as a head coach,
that's fair.
I just feel like this is just an uncanny landing spot for a second year, for a first year starting quarterback and a second year player who also got to learn for a year. Granted, not in a way that it was helpful with a knee injury, but he got to learn this system and had all the advantages just being in meetings and everything else from last year as well. So I'll stick to my hometown bias here, and I'll take the Vikings narrow.
As long as you acknowledge the bias, we're all good with that.
I mean, my opinion was that I think it's a toss up because of the intangibles at quarterback. When you consider the ceiling on Caleb Williams to be much higher when he was drafted compared to the ceiling on J.J. McCarthy, I understand that he came from a run-heavy Michigan offense. And there's a huge level of intrigue around McCarthy because he's from here. So we want to know what he's doing. We want to know how he's developing, especially since he's still in the division. But when you heard so many scouts talk about how they just saw something intangible when it came to him as well, that you couldn't necessarily see in the execution of plays, but just his leadership and how they thought that he would carry himself or carry a team. You can't argue with the national title. But did perhaps Jim Harbaugh at Michigan run the ball more because he saw some shortcomings in McCarthy's game that led him to need to, you know, charge. I wanted to get your take on that as well, because he wasn't as developed of a passer as Caleb Williams.
No, and very few were. But it's Jim Harbaugh. He's going to run the ball almost regardless of the talent that he had at quarterback. And when you look at the spectrum of passes that McCarthy made and the plays that he made, especially off script, boy, there's so much to build on. The arm strength is very, very good. His ability to throw all the difficult, the deep out passes, very good. McCarthy's, you know, the leadership off the charts. There's so much to like about him. I just think asking any quarterback to throw his arm out of socket in a Jim Harbaugh offense is just not what Harbaugh is all about. And, you know, McCarthy, within the framework of what he was asked to do at Michigan, produced the national championship. And, you know, the other part of it is, if the Vikings, who granted they didn't get as much of a look at McCarthy as they wanted last year because of the knee injury, but if the Vikings had seen things that suggested he was not ready to be the leader, either Sam Darnold or Aaron Rodgers would be on roster right now.
Yeah, I feel like that's fair.
I think when I look at this right now, and you guys both make good points, right? But for me, with J.J. McCarthy, because, as you said, the run-heavy Michigan offense specifically, but also there's a reason why Caleb Williams was drafted where he was drafted and J.J. McCarthy was drafted where he was drafted. And I lean into that more. This is more of a ceiling game than a floor game to me. And Caleb Williams has already had some adversity that I think, honestly, that J.J. McCarthy is going to have to go through. And for all the talk about how well Sam Darnold did in the rehab project of Kevin O'Connell, you wonder what the ceiling is, much like the ceiling that we saw, I think, late in the season and specifically in the playoffs with Sam Darnold, and how that might be mirrored by J.J. McCarthy, especially since he's not as experienced as Sam Darnold.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, that is all perfectly fair here. And Caleb, I thought Caleb's play got better as the year went on. The last 5-6 games, I thought especially good. Did Caleb throw like one interception in the last 10 games of the season or something crazy like that?
He had a ridiculous streak of not throwing interceptions, but unfortunately I think it came at the cost of him taking some risks that would have made sense in games if he wanted to push the envelope as a passer.
That's probably fair. I haven't broken down late season tape on Caleb Williams, but to my memory, I remember becoming more stable, more accurate, and more and just not turning the ball over and making mistakes that hurt the team. Other than that play where he held the ball for like 12 and a half seconds in the pocket, or we remember, which was that one will go down. Yes.
Trying to make something happen.
Yes. Are we going to get a Caleb and Caleb backfield? Work with me on this. I want Caleb Johnson, the Iowa back who carried the entire offense. I want to have a Caleb backfield in Chicago. Can we will this into existence?
Well, we've been in Genty.
I have no
mode.
Problem with that. We've been watching the odds on Genty is a fairer comment, right?
Yeah, and understanding what the drafting preferences were perhaps for Ben Johnson specifically because of what happened in Detroit with who they decided when they didn't necessarily need to take a running back, but they did take a running back in the first round. People are leaning into that, saying that could be a possibility. I'm of the belief that if you Ashton Genty falls to you and he wants to take him, fine, but you better be good. Like, do whatever you want as long as you produce wins on the field. I don't really care.
I see on this offense, given where it is now with the offseason moves, this is your gaping hole is running back. And Ashton Genty is not going to fail. I mean, there is nothing about his college production that would suggest that he would not be the most likely player to produce wins at that 10 pick out of anybody in this draft that's likely to be there. I mean, he had more yards after contact last year than any other running back had, period. I mean, it's just Genty is the best prospect since Saquon Barkley, and that if he's there at 10, to me that is that is just like a complete no-brainer. I'm just assuming he won't be. So I'm looking at your early second round pick, and I'm thinking Caleb Johnson to that spot, because he's a remarkable talent. Inside runner for a big guy. He's got the great feet. He averaged almost just under 7 yards per carry on runs between the guards, and now you've got guards. I'd love to see Caleb Johnson there if you don't end up getting Jenty.
I love the take, but I'm not here for the Bijan Robinson erasure.
Oh.
He was the best prospect. He was a better prospect than Jenty. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. We will find out soon enough. Thanks so much for your time, Paul. We appreciate
it. Great catching up, my friend.
Paul Charchian, not talking fantasy, but talking kind of fantasy. It just depends on how you want to look at it. That's Paul Charchian, the director of Guillotine Leagues at FantasyLife.com.
Not many feelings out there in the world, you know? It's hard to describe it. Just being able to push somebody around and just put all your weight on top of them just to, like, impose your will on them.
Kevin is very, very intellectual.
In person, I don't think I've ever seen... Do you guys have a skyscraper here? I don't know. I've never seen a skyscraper in person. I definitely want to go check it out.
Not that football players can't be intellectual, but he's not a big partier. He's low-key.
Kevin, you can tell what kind of individual he is, you know? The rookies put up the tree in a meeting room, you know? You should see what that tree looks like. You know, it's a beautiful tree.
Yeah, we got decorations on there with the ornaments. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of ornaments on there.
If you just saw a mugshot of him, he looks like he's going to engineering class.
A lot of things is helping that is me doing Pilates now.
Tevin Jenkins, all right, so can we talk to you about your relationship with Mark Grody, our Bears beat reporter?
Mark.
go.
All great things. He told me earlier, I'll say all great things.
He said to say great things. All right.
The Baconator, large strawberry lemonade, large fry. You get a 10-piece spicy nugget, and if I'm feeling it, maybe a frost.
Baked potato.
What we call skull sessions in the summer.
What sessions? I'm sorry.
Skull. Like skull. Like that. That's what we call it. Yeah. I'm like skull. We call it skull.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And I'm not familiar with skull session. Is that like an acronym, or is that just what they call it?
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Okay. All right. Cool, man.
Might be an acronym, but I don't know.
Okay. All right, man.
He's had pretty much the same girlfriend for 3 or 4 years.
Yes, my fiance, my favorite thing for me to make for her, my ribs on a new Traeger.
Well, give your fiance a big hug and take good care of her. And I really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much, man. Let's do it again soon, okay?
Yes, sir. I really appreciate you.
We have a little bit of breaking Bears news here. The Browns are signing Tevin Jenkins.
He's gone, and we couldn't do nothing about it.
The fact that Chris Tannehill was able to get the Goodfellas treatment together while running the board.
Outrageous.
Of our show is outrageous.
Absolutely outrageous.
That is well done.
I mean, because these free agent moves, they just happen all the time during these days. They dance above me as I sink. I see them through a crystal haze. And this one happened early in the show, and we knew we had to talk to this man.
Yeah, we had to get Mark Grody on the show. He is our Bears beat reporter. He's a good man and thorough, and he is here in the Score studio. So, Groats, your guy.
But listening to that great open and tribute to our guy, Tevin Jenkins, by Chris Tannehill, I just realized how much he has grown and what he has gotten out of Chicago. He didn't know what ornaments were before he was in Chicago. He didn't know what skyscrapers were before he was in Chicago. He didn't know who Mark Grody was before he was in Chicago. So I think that this man, although I hate to see him go from a personal standpoint, he has grown a lot under the collective watch of all of us.
So you think we've done our job? You think we've grown the man?
We have grown the man. It has happened. Mark Trestman, years later, the man has been grown, and he is Tevin Jenkins, and that's why we must send him off into bigger and better Cleveland.
You like Cleveland?
Oh, you like that?
You think it's cool?
Oh, you like that?
There's only one skyscraper in Cleveland.
We looked it up. Are you serious?
Yeah, there's just one.
Oh, what qualifies a building to be a skyscraper? Does anybody
know?
We
qualified it as above 80 stories.
Okay.
Well, that was our ranking, but Shane looked up the official.
Oh, it was 57?
At something like that. The official designation of a skyscraper might even be lower than that.
Holy cow, I used to live in a skyscraper then, in the previous building to now. But so not, that's pretty cool to think
not
about.
Not anymore. So Tevin's going to be a big fish in a little pond.
Yeah, I guess he is. I was thinking about Tevin, though. On the serious side of Jenkins, do you remember the hope that he represented? Because it was Justin Fields moving up to get Justin Fields that year. Maybe the most exciting draft ever for the Chicago Bears in terms of that moment of moving up to get Justin Fields. Because when they moved up to get Mitch Trubisky, people were like, huh, not real sure about this. We've already got the...
It's my year.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Not so much. But they draft Justin Fields, and then they go get the offensive, the left tackle in Tevin Jenkins, who could have been a first-round pick. He fell to the Bears in the second round. So you come in with Justin Fields and Tevin Jenkins, and as good as things feel right now for the Bears, that felt pretty good, too, at the time, and it never worked.
No, you're absolutely right. Like, and that was a trade as well. That Bears pick came from Carolina in a deal, but I don't remember. Did they trade up for Tevin Jenkins?
Yeah, I think they did a few spots.
I think they jumped up.
Yeah, because he was, like, I have to go back.
He was thought to be a round one tackle talent.
Late first round, right, and then it wasn't shocking that he fell into the second round, and maybe that's where we should have had our antennas up. I'm not just saying about Tevin's career. I'm talking about the back issues that he had right away. And then, Speaks, you and I talked about this a lot. What was the phraseology that you and I used? What's the fatal flaw?
It was an entire Bears camp where we knew they didn't like something about Tevin as a tackle.
Ryan Pohl specifically was the one who, and the more I think about it, like, what was the fatal flaw? The fatal flaw was that he wasn't Braxton Jones. Ryan Pohl's that year, if you remember, because I remember it vividly, being inside the Walter Payton Center during an OTA. No uniforms, nothing, media's casual. We're looking out there, and all of a sudden, you see Braxton Jones starting at left tackle and Tevin Jenkins on the second line, and we're all like, whoa. And then early on, it's like, oh, let's not make too much of this. He became the starting left tackle, did Braxton Jones.
My guy and not my guy.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Braxton?
So is it a my guy and not my guy situation? But why wouldn't you move Tevin over or still think of him as a tackle? Was it because what does Braxton have that Tevin did not in Ryan Poles' mind?
Health,
and I think that some of the
how about Braxton's smart as hell.
Yeah,
and Braxton has
ridiculous length too.
A lot of length. So length and smarts. I could see because Tevin was clearly pissed by whatever was going on. Right,
he was. Yeah, I mean, if you remember, there were reports about him in that early training camp about
him walking away.
A report. I think it was Peggy something from NFL. Something from the, it's amazing. Something from the NFL.
We both went for it right away. That's her legacy.
That's so good. I had to give credit where credit is due. I think that was where I heard that. That he wanted to be traded, but then everything became okay. And then he really became a good guard. And believe it or not, last year, I want to say, he did. He started 14 games last year, missed three. But the problem, a couple things. Too many times where he went down in a game, and so he would miss. So that's not accounted for necessarily in the numbers that I'm bringing you. And unfortunately for Tevin Jenkins, the Bears just had to do something differently. They had to do something differently, and that's what they have done.
I don't have any problem with them moving on from Tevin.
Believe it or not, I don't either. From a football standpoint, I don't either.
I am curious on what the numbers are on that, because I feel like maybe you might have been able to get a deal for a guy that's starting quality, but maybe Tevin was like, I just need to go someplace else.
That's what it sounded like on the last day of camp. Her last day of the season.
Bingo. He knew it.
He was ready, man. And think about it. If you've played for Ryan Poles for this long after everything that went down on that in that first camp, and you've built this rep as a guy who doesn't show up enough, doesn't play enough, they seem to be doubting your pain tolerance. F you, man. And Tevin, I hope Tevin proves everybody wrong.
Or they give you $20 million.
That helps. a lot.
Who Nate Davis.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a terrible choice.
Just going to play ping pong, man. Last words to me.
He's probably still playing.
Put a hand on my shoulder. Sorry, man. I can't talk. I got to go play ping pong.
You know, it's funny. For all the things that guys in the NFL do, and there's been a lot of guys that have done a lot of bad stuff, the one thing that is really hard for any player to overcome, they'll take you back if you broke the law. They'll take you back if you were – but if you don't play, it is hard for you to make your way back. Other players won't back you. Coaches look at that as the biggest sin. What do you mean? Because that thing that happened with him where they were clearly like desperate for offensive line and then he's a late scratch, man, that's the type of thing that once it gets around the league –
dude, you're so right.
You're cooked.
He would have to, at this point, open his mouth is what Nate Davis would have to do, and he'd have to be very clear and admit some things. If he truly wants back in, if he even cares. Does Nate Davis even care?
That's a great question.
But what he would have to do, guys, is he would have to say, yeah, I was a bum with the Bears. I was immature. I did some stupid things. I feel bad about it, but I really want to play, and I've made my money. I want to play. But does he? I doubt it.
Nate Davis and Patrick Williams. Kindred spirits.
Oh my God, I heard you guys talking to Cowley. Jarring to hear somebody finally say it. Yeah. Finally say it that they are out on him.
And he's basing it, he's adding the final piece of having seen him on the bench react in a certain way.
Right.
After years of giving him a chance, it made all the sense in the world. Hey, for Ben's vision today, we did edge rushers. And we talked about a few different options there at the edge. And let me just ask you this basic question, because I thought it ended up interesting conversation within our segment. Mike Green, two times accused of sexual assault, once in high school, once seemingly at Virginia, and then he went to Marshall and absolutely dominated. He denied it vociferously, but kind of inelegantly, in fact, very inelegantly at the combine. Are the Bears in a better position to take a character chance than they were, say, a couple years ago with Jalen Carter? Obviously, very different situations.
Yes, I think the answer is absolutely yes. This is not a season where I would, man, this is really bold. This is not a season where I'm anticipating a 10-game losing streak for the Chicago Bears.
Let's write that down.
So, yeah, Riles, put it on tape.
I am not maybe a good 8-gamer. I can't promise you there won't be a 9-game losing streak, but there will not be a 10-game losing streak in the Bears' future. So, yes, they are more equipped than they were. And I have to imagine, too, that to some degree, although I think Ryan Poles' reasons for not drafting Jalen Carter felt pretty sound at the time, I think that this is a chance, would potentially be a chance for a make good, because he is a guy that can sack the quarterback 20 times in a year.
Somewhere Jerry Riles is like, what did I do? What the hell did I do?
Oh, come on!
Tell him to put it on tape.
I got a text, by the way, from Matt Fishman earlier in the show, because he got my, it's Bill, incidentally. I go by Bill, incidentally, from Bill Wade, former Bears Hall of Famer Bill Wade.
Old Bill Wade?
I believe Murph called him Billy, and he said, I go by Bill, incidentally.
Didn't he also call Walter Wally?
Yes, don't call me Wally. Yeah, Murph had a thing.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Don't call him Wally.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what you gotta tell people.
And
sometimes
we can bring Riles and Murph together by Karch Kirily.
Oh.
right?
What?
What's the name of that show you do? Is that Generation Next?
Oh, ooh. That was their show. That was Fish and Riles.
Fish and Riles. I thought you were in that too.
No. It was Fish and Hood.
You guys were down the stretch.
Yeah, me and Jason Griffin were down the stretch. Damn right.
Where were you when you heard the big news, Wally?
Don't call me Wally.
It's Walter Payton.
I love it because Walter Payton has the least imposing voice ever, but that's angry Walter Payton
right there.
And he likes to joke. He's a big-time jokester.
Right.
He wasn't joking then.
No, I was like, okay, sorry, Walter. I'll never do it again. Yep. You're the greatest of all time.
All right, so you think, yes, in a better situation.
I do think that they're in a better situation for that. And you know what? I am still down for another guy who could potentially get to that a double-digit number.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm kind of sold. Like, somebody told me on Odangbo, they were like, hey, because I've been not critical at all of Odangbo, but just asking questions because he doesn't have big sack numbers. Somebody told me, think Montez Sweat when you think Odangbo, which is great, but that's still not getting to the quarterback as much. That's making things happen, which Odangbo does. He gets to the quarterback by way of rushes and things like that, but he has not been knocking the quarterback down enough.
Maybe the idea is that if you have two Montezes, one of them's going to get to the quarterback.
Oh, God. Can you imagine the It's Montez segment if that
That's
is the
Dio.
Case?
That's two Montezes.
That's Dio.
That's Dio.
Poor Dio. Everybody's calling him Dio instead of Odangbo. I mean, like I say, like nobody knows who Dio is. So I think that we all, as broadcasters, have to do a better job of giving him his Odangbo until he's somebody.
Dio!
And then we can go Dio.
Dio! Pass rush, come and you're gonna get home.
No.
Bears.
Oh, come on!
I agree, Tanny.
What the hell,
100%.
Man? 100%.
Do you guys know on the clock is tonight? Because I'm sure you don't.
I knew that.
I knew that.
Thank you.
I had asked you earlier this week, and you were like, yeah, it's coming back on Thursday night.
Oh, uh-huh. you did, actually, Lawrence.
Harry Belafonte coming up on the show?
A little bit of Harry Belafonte.
Probably not, considering.
No, but we will play Lollapalooza songs throughout the night.
You will?
Yeah, like I told Sean, I said, because I'm going to be on until 9 tonight, so I said, let's just do all Lollapalooza hits from this group this year.
The lineup came out?
Yeah, the lineup came out, so we're just going to play Korn all night. So, yeah, it'll be great.
Who else is on the show?
We will be having Bob Beeler. Old Bob Beeler is the play-by-play voice of Boise State. Ashton Gentry goes to Boise State.
Let's
so we
go.
Will talk to him about that player, other prospects in the conference as well.
And I thought there was one other guest. Did that not happen?
Oh, Matt Spiegel will be joining.
It's
not going to happen. Okay.
I can say I don't mind saying it here, unless you think that would be
Tevin
dumb
Jenkins?
For me to say. Yeah, I mean, I've reached out to him. It's not, nothing has been confirmed, but let's put him down as a maybe. So maybe okay. Tevin Jenkins.
Right,
I have reached out. We'll see.
And you two are going to be together tomorrow.
Yes, I'll be filling in for you.
Yes, because I am going to Rick Camp's wedding.
Oh, that is fantastic.
My guy Campy's getting married.
Rick Camp in studio.
Yeah, I didn't think I'd make the cut.
No, he's not going to be in studio tomorrow. He's going to be up there sweating.
I personally,
that's what he's going to be doing.
I personally think you guys should have had the wedding at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village, which is where Circus Sports Illinois and 670 The Score invite you to. Kick off the start to March College Hoops with us tomorrow at Real Time Sports in Elk Grove Village.
Tomorrow!
Mark Grody, that guy, and me, Matt Spiegel, from 2 to 6 as we do the show live as the tournament action heats up. Enjoy every game, specials on buckets of Miller Lite and Coors Light, and more. We will toast to Rick Camp at some point.
You should. He's marrying a really wonderful young lady named Sam. She's awesome. And they are in so much love, man.
That's awesome.
Rick Camp, look at me right now. If you're listening, look at me. Congratulations, buddy. You're the best.
Congratulations.
He is the best.
Yes.
By the way, the show tomorrow is sponsored, not the wedding, but the show is sponsored by Circus Sports Illinois, sports betting the way it should be.
Tanny, how quickly into the reception is Campy going to turn the conversation from us being happy for him
to West Coast basketball?
Exactly! Exactly! To some sort of Portland Trailblazers stat that he wants to share with us.
Ugh, that sounds awful.
He's going to do it. We're
going to
be like, oh, Campy, we're so happy for you. We're so proud of you. Sam's great. And he's going to be like, guys, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with Golden State right now.
And for those who know, I've been told that it's possible that Modelo's will be making some sort of appearance as far as the motif tomorrow.
Over-unders on Kevin Durant references during the ceremony. 0.5.
Will there be a basketball-themed wedding? Is there going to be, is it like Zawoski when he had the Blackhawks theme? From what I understand.
John Tesh is going to be at the wedding. That's the big surprise.
Also, and every dish has...
One, two, three, four.
Every dish has peanut butter in it. Nothing but peanut butter.
Teshi doing his little thing.
Teshi.
I'm
super excited. Yeah. Groats, thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
We got to go.
We
got to go.
Bye. That's fine.
We got to go. That's Mark Grody.
Okay.
He's coming up at 6 o'clock. When we come back, Tanny's got something for us next here on The Score.
We want some tough, some gritty, some dirty individuals, and we feel pretty good about the two guys we got. Smart is a word that comes to mind, particularly with the interior players. We need guys that we love to have some versatility to our scheme, some multiplicity, if you will. And so we got a couple guys in the building now that we feel strongly can handle a variety of different concepts and schemes that we might want to employ each and every week. Beyond that, I mean, their play speaks for themselves just in terms of what the tape says. The character, the integrity, it's top notch. I can speak firsthand with Jonah, and Ryan can speak firsthand with Joe. I'm really, really excited to get these guys in the room, combined with the coaches that we've already put together for that room. I feel really good about the style of play we'll have this.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Those North Carolina guys, they know ball. They know ball.
Man, we've been heavy on Carolina this week. Had Brendan Haywood the other day.
That's true.
Talking tournament.
We've been talking about Jordan.
Yep, a lot of Jordan in the news because it's thirty years?
30 years from I'm back.
And then you got the head football coach, who's a Carolina guy.
Yep, and someone who was in uniform with them is joining us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Michael Felder is an amazing college football analyst. If you're not following him in the bleachers on Twitter, you are doing yourself a disservice, especially as the draft nears. Also, his Substack is pretty awesome as well. If you need advice on what shoes to rock, what things to throw on the grill, or if you just want to get a better perspective on life in general, Michael Felder is the guy to help you with that. And he joins us now here on The Score. Sir, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate you. Did we lose him? After that setup?
Yeah, no, that was really loving, man. That was good. Like, there was a lot of genuine...
No, you guys didn't lose me. I muted myself. That's on me.
That's awesome. You know what we like to say, Michael? Like, if you don't know who Grandpa is on the Zoom, it's probably you, you know?
Yeah, so. It's me.
I'm out here trying to get my beard like yours, sir. You know, I'm working through it. And
yeah.
I don't know if I'll ever get it to that level, but I will do my best for sure. All right, so you got to tell us, how well do you know Ben Johnson?
I met him in 2004. He was a freshman. I was a sophomore. He was one of my best friends. He was his roommate in his freshman year. He also lived with another one of my best friends for 3 years. I've known Ben Johnson for a long time. Just for the record, I have also picked him off more than once in practice. So there's that. I know you guys don't know this, you know what number he was in college?
14? What number was he?
23.
Oh, wow.
He got to wear Carolina blue 23?
Yes, as a football player.
Yeah, right. But still, did you know what was, wow, was there Jordan love in there? Because
no, Jordan had nothing to do with the football program at all. 0%. It was Ben just had to get a number, and all the numbers were taken, and so they just gave him one.
Okay. But because he chose Chicago in part because of his love for the town, and like he made a Cubs trip here with his family every summer. So I thought you were adding a layer to that. That's why I asked.
No, I was adding a layer to the fact that Ben really had to learn football to make sure that things worked. He was one of the signal callers we had on the sidelines. Played for Gary Tranquil. Played for Frank Cignetti. This is a guy, like, I've known Ben for a long time. Ben, I mean, I guess, what is it, 2025? And I've known Ben since 2004. He and I don't keep in touch as much as him and a couple of my other friends do. But he is someone that's always been in my purview. He is, I will say this, and I'm going to front porch this as we get into it. Y'all don't mess up my boy. He is the nicest person that I've ever met in my life. He's the nicest football player I've ever played with in my life. Ben knows what he's doing. He loves football, and he really does want to do good things. I love me some Ben Johnson.
Was there a moment when you guys were together down there? And I know it's hard to project 20 years out, but was there a moment where you're like, oh, wait, this guy, what he thinks or how he feels about football, it's not just he just wants to be here. This is going to be a career for him.
There were two. One, so I got a guy that lives a mile away from me, my buddy Jay. He was Ben's freshman roommate, and Ben was thinking about quitting, and Jay was like, no, you belong in this space. And so Ben stayed and stuck with it and kept going. One. Two, watching the fake fumble to the throw to Sam Laporta, that is a play that we had at UNC. It wasn't the exact same play, but Gary Tranquil, he's got a lot of Gary Tranquil in his DNA. And Trank ran a play that we used to call sucker. Play was called sucker because everybody fell for it. And so I actually got in trouble for not falling for sucker after the third time I'd seen it in practice. But we ran a play called sucker where it was a fake screen to Watt to a deep ball to Jesse Holly. And we ended up, that helped us win a game against Miami. And that's like a huge thing. And Ben's working every single element that he's had in. Ben's a guy, and it's funny because my dad is taking my daughter, I think this weekend, to go get a new tackle box. Ben has a tackle box full of lures that are going to catch you some fish.
Michael Felder is on with us, and man, this is fun to talk about Ben Johnson from the Carolina days to now. By the way, Gary Tranquil worked with Nick Saban for multiple teams over several decades as an assistant and ended up as a head coach at Carolina during your guys' time there. One of those things that we're loving about Ben is he seems to really think about football from a, well, we got a lot of different schemes we could do. Let's look at our talent and just kind of do whatever is best for the talent. Like, from that perspective, he's not like a one-trick pony as a strategy guy. That's like, it's just sort of a basic human sensibility that seems to be elevated with him. Does that jibe with your memories of him?
Yeah, that's what he does. Like, this is, like, that's what football is. And he just, all he does is play football. Like, I don't mean to be like dismissive or anything. I just think what he does is play football. Like, he wants his guys to go out there and play. And he understands, like, this is a guy that played on a football team that had, you know, like, he played on a football team that had Gerald Sensabaugh, Matt Baker, Darian Durant, but we also had Jesse Holly, and we had, for a little while at least, we had Adarius Bowman. And you figure out, how do we get to where we want to be? And I think that's the biggest thing for me, is he's figuring out where he wants to be. And I think that's the interesting part. I heard you guys kind of on the, was it a rejoin, talk about Joe Thuney and talk about Jonah Jackson. And, like, I think working with Dan Campbell was a huge thing for him, because now he's like, he realized, like, big people are important and they do matter, and we need these guys. But at the end of the day, also, he recognizes talent. And I don't know, like, I understand that you guys are divisional rivals, the Lions and the Bears, but Amon-Ra St. Brown, to me, that's the lesson that I take away. Amon-Ra St. Brown has never said a negative word about this guy. He is someone that is an earner, a worker, wants to work hard. And I think that watching your opponent, and a guy that's going to be a divisional opponent, speak highly of you is huge. And then on the flip side of that, my teammates, guys like Ryan Taylor, who played for the Green Bay Packers, which is, for you guys, another divisional opponent. Ryan Taylor, he's retired now, obviously, but Ryan Taylor being like, Ben's going to kill it. Like, they just got to let him do what he does. I think this is a really good – it's a good fit. I think it's a scary – to me, it's a scary fit, but it's because Ben was not like – Ben wasn't as boisterous as some of the rest of us were.
So Felder, do you think it's a scary fit because what he might be able to do with Caleb Williams?
No, I think it's a scary fit because what Chicago might do to him.
we're going to try to take it easy on him, man. Everyone's happy that he's here.
That's what I want. I want everybody to be happy that he's here, give him a chance, and let him do his thing. I think he can work miracles with Caleb Williams, if we're being honest. Like, he is someone, and I thought Dan Campbell was a great foil for him, because Ben, up until he got the Chicago job, you never heard Ben talk, right?
Correct.
So I think now he's got to talk, he's got to be out in front, and I think that's the part that might be a little bit more different for him. The football, don't worry about him with football. Do not worry about Ben Johnson with football. This man is going to destroy it. He is going to go out there, and he's going to make sure that Caleb is protected. We've already seen that right now in the offseason. We're probably going to see it more in the draft as well. Make sure this guy's protected. And when I say protected, I mean protected from an offensive line standpoint, but protected also from a defensive standpoint. And then you're going to load him up with weapons and you're going to call plays that work. And I think that he's that. I'm not worried about that. I think Caleb Williams is going to be in a really good spot to where he's going to be able to go out, make plays, find ways to get guys the football in the best way, and also not have to be the guy that makes every single play. It's going to be, whether it's your tight ends, it's your wide receivers, it's all this stuff. You have DJ Moore still, right? Like, this is a thing where you have an opportunity to call plays that allow for this, for Ben's mind and for obviously his staff, for them to create space. And if you can create space in the NFL, then you create touchdowns.
I'd love to know what your scouting report on Caleb was coming out last year. And was there anything that you saw with him with the Bears that gave you any sort of pause on what you thought he could be coming out of USC?
Man, why are you doing this to me, dude? Come on, man.
Because you're the best at this.
Well, you're on in Chicago now. So.
You're the best at this, so I want to get your opinion because I trust it.
I thought it was reckless. I don't care about the nail painting. As you guys can see right here, my nails are painted as well. Like, I don't care. I don't care about the nail painting. I don't care about the writing, like F whatever it is on there. I don't care about that. I just thought he was a little bit reckless and relied a lot on his athleticism. And I think Ben has the ability, because Ben was also a quarterback in college. Ben can reel that in to make him have to get through his progressions, to make him have to get through what he sees. And I think Ben's really good at that. And that's the thing that Ben was really good at. He had to be good at in college. And so I think about that. I also think about the fact that Caleb does, but when you have preternatural, like this insane talent, I hope I use that word right.
You did. He killed it. Crushed it.
Okay, good. So when you have talent that's like unbelievable, sometimes you rely on it. And I think that I think about this a lot because if I'm not mistaken, Ben played a season for Butch Davis because I left before him. Butch took a guy like, was it Quinn? Butch took Quinn and made Quinn play real football instead of just using his talent. And I think that's another place where Ben can draw from. But the reality for me is he's going to make him have to play real football. And then guess what? When things get a little bit hairy, right? When things get hairy, when things get a little bit, you know, what's the word? When things are
off schedule, off platform, mm-hmm. He can make those plays.
I was going to say foobar, but yes.
it all speaks the same, man. But exactly what you're talking about, we're looking forward to it. And we know there's going to be growing pains with it for Caleb because they skipped a year of teaching it the right way. They blew it, man. Like, they had a chance, and they gave him Shane Waldron, and then they gave him two other OCs, and they fired the whole staff in the middle, and they had a dumbass head coach who had no offensive philosophy whatsoever. So Ben's got a lot of work that he's got to do, and it's going to be fun to watch. Talking to Michael Felder in the bleachers over at Bleacher Report and on Twitter as well. I saw that you wrote about safeties on your Substack today.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. and so, like, one of the positions that we're open-minded to in the first round with the Bears' first pick, maybe not a 10, maybe they'll trade back a little bit. Is there a safety that the Bears should invest in? We probably need a strong,
you need both because you have both of the safeties are on the last years of their deal.
And we don't know about the concussion future of Jaquan Brisker. So we probably need both. So tell us your favorite safety that the Bears should think about in round one.
One, I love Brisker. I do. I do love him. But if you're like, if we're looking for a replacement, I would go RJ Mickens. And sure, you probably can get him a little bit later. I work with RJ Mickens' dad, Ray Mickens, obviously. He's got the pedigree. And when we were doing the opening together, and the reality for me is he is really good as a downhill safety. I really love Elijah. Like, if you're looking for a guy that could kind of do a little bit, he's going to, like, I don't think he's going to be the best tackler, Elijah Clark from Syracuse, but he's going to be all over the field making plays, and I think that's a positive. Lathan Ransom is kind of a combo of both of those guys. He's a better tackler than Clark. He is aggressive. And then if you're looking for somebody that's going to play in that deep back, Jalen Reed. I like Jalen Reed, kid out of Penn State. And then obviously, what is his name? Nick Emanwori is, I think he's probably safety number one. So we go from there if that's what you're looking for. But the reality is, I mean, let's load up the offensive line. And I think that's something that Ben's probably picked up from Dan Campbell. Like, let's load up. Like, they got Penei Sewell up there in Detroit, right? Like, let's load up on the offensive line.
Who are the linemen that you like?
Get out of LSU.
Yeah, Will Campbell might last to 10.
He might.
If Will Campbell's sitting there at 10, that's an Insta grab for me.
Yeah, that's it. To me, that's the one for me because I think that it's hard to draft a guard that early, but I think Will Campbell is a guy that maybe you have to move into guard, but at the end of the day, I think he is probably 1A, 1B offensive lineman. So I like him. Abdul Carter won't be there as an edge guy.
Yeah.
And so that's just the reality of the draft. Like you got to look at where things slot. And I also don't know what this quarterback situation looks like with Cam, because I don't think that Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders would have got picked before anyone that we saw go in the top 10 in last year's draft.
I agree with you. It's interesting to see what people are saying about Shedeur now and where he might end up, where he might end up in the Aaron Rodgers space of sitting there on draft night, not hearing his name called. And it's interesting because I feel like with him, I see a guy that doesn't have crazy measurables, which is weird thinking about a Sanders doesn't have crazy measurables.
Right.
But I found him to be a much better football player than I expected when he transferred out of Jackson State to Colorado. His game speed to me, Felder, is a lot better than what the stopwatch and what the radar gun says about him.
He's a quarterback. Who cares? Like, that's the reality. But here's what I will say. I think that, and you mentioned Aaron Rodgers. You know what I will say? I think he's got a little bit of Randy Moss in there, right? And not like the off-the-field stuff. What I'm saying is teams are scared that it's not that he doesn't care. It's that he knows that he's an NFL player. He knows that he's an NFL player. And teams want you to be hungry. This is a guy that grew up, you know, he's lived in mansions in his entire life. He knows he's going to be fine no matter what. He just likes playing football. He loves playing football. And the reality for me is if a guy grew up, he just loves playing football, I think that's an asset. But I think for owners, they want these guys that are hungry, guys that are, you know, champing at the bit to get there. And Shedeur doesn't, in an interview, in a meeting, he doesn't have that for them. And then obviously he doesn't test off the charts. So what he does have is this love for football. He wants to be there. So at the end of the day, I think somebody, if he doesn't get picked to the back end of the first round, somebody's going to get a quarterback that is going to absolutely change their franchise, be able to go out and make plays, is super, like, he's incredibly accurate. He is incredibly resilient. He is willing to stand in the pocket. And guess what? Every offensive line, if he gets picked in the back half of the first round, every single offensive line will be better than any offensive line that he's ever had. And so he'll have that opportunity as well. So I love Shedeur. I don't know that he's, again, and I mentioned this at the start where I said, I don't know that any of these guys would get picked before guys like Drake May or guys like the guys at the start of the last year's draft, right? But Caleb, obviously.
Jaden,
oh my God, what a year. And so I do think that what we're looking at is a guy that's going to go to maybe a more beneficial situation.
Michael Felder, it's been an absolute pleasure. The listeners are loving it. And by listeners, I mean viewers in part. We're hanging out with you on Twitch and YouTube in your lair. I'm not going to ask you about the 2025 YMCA summer camp guide. Not going to ask you about that. Not going to ask you about the cowbell with the number 75. Not going to ask about that. I got two.
That's not 75. My man, that's a 15.
Okay.
That's from my high school.
Okay.
Mom used to wave this every game for me.
Okay, see, damn, I asked about it. That's my bad. Going to ask you about how many Astros hats are there? It's a lot of Astros hats. Are you upset that we got Kyle Tucker up here? That's one question.
Not upset. Okay. I'll be honest with you, man. I when the Astros won the World Series,
yeah,
I was like, I'm good. I never thought they would ever win a World Series, so I'm not greedy, man. One's enough for me, man. Okay. I'm like DMX. Keep it real, partner. Give to the needy.
All right, but you got
my favorite DMX song.
Is it right there?
Stop being greedy. That's my favorite DMX song.
That's why you guys are mishpucha. You got that. You got the beard, and you got that. I got one other. You do seem greedy about Duke's mayonnaise jars. I believe you have two commemorative jars of Duke's mayonnaise. Explain yourself. Three now. We're up to three. What the hell is going on with that?
Y'all, if you ever had Duke's mayonnaise, you ain't had mayonnaise, dog. I lived in Chicago for 4 years. Loho knows this. And the reality is, I made deviled eggs, and I made a potato salad for my neighbors. And they were like, how can it be this good? And I was like, it's the Duke's. It's got that twang.
He's right.
I've never had it. I've never had it.
You never had Duke's?
I know. Michael, hey, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't know.
Come on.
All right.
Felder, you're the best, man. I appreciate you so much. Thanks for jumping on with us. This is a lot of fun. Let's do this again soon.
Yeah, let's do it again soon. I'm excited for the draft. I truly, like, I'm very excited. There's a lot of guys that I'm excited. I still talk to my man Edgar, who works I don't know what it's called anymore, I'll be honest.
Well,
with you,
no, he is now, like, he got promoted up, and he's doing a lot of cool stuff with CHSN's digital CHSN. Work now.
There it is.
Yeah,
he's
man.
Doing podcasts for them, which is awesome. So I'm excited. Like, I still keep in touch with him routinely. Talk to a lot of my folks from Chicago. Talk to my man Alex. Obviously, you and I keep in touch. So no, I my wife misses Chicago dearly. I am back at home, and I can tell you one thing, man. It's 80 degrees right now.
Whatever.
It's 80 degrees right now. I heard the weather report coming in.
No, but Felder, you missed out. You missed out, though, because this weekend, and even yesterday, when I was driving home yesterday, it was 72 degrees here in the city. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to be 40 degrees tomorrow.
Now it's 41, and it looks like it's 11 p.m. outside.
Bro, we got the – hang on, let me – we got the – full sun out here.
Whatever.
I got a kid. I got a 7-year-old's birthday party coming up next weekend.
Hey, man, just find a good camp, okay? Just look through that guide and find yourself a good camp.
Hey, you know what? Don't play me.
It's important.
He's got it all.
It matters. The camps matter at the Y.
Man, absolutely. All right. So here's what we're gonna do.
She ain't going to no camps. What she's gonna go to the pool every single day.
That's it.
That's it. Here's what we're going to do. After the draft, you come back on and you tell us how your boy Ben and the Bears did.
I will.
Cool?
I will. Yes, cool.
My man, that's Michael Felder. Follow him. His feed on College Game Days is immaculate.
That's awesome.
You learn so much. He is so fun. He's so good at what he does. I'm glad that he had time for us and you got a chance to meet that man.
That was so fun. Good stuff.
Yeah, he's quality individual. And shout out to my guy Edgar and my guy Michael over there over at CHSN. Those guys are doing a lot with their digital. They're building that thing up. And they have to because David Hall demands it.
There is a diva. Yeah, at the
David Hall. No, I not just him. Mentioned.
There's another one. There's a free agent diva in the NFL who we all we feel a lot of feelings about this man. And I want to know where you think he should go, where you would like him to go. I want to know where the listeners think that Aaron Rodgers should go, because he's got options.
He does have options. I know some places that Bears fans would love for Aaron Rodgers to go.
H-E double hockey sticks.
Something like that. Or they'd love for him to have to show up on 79th Street and see if he can make it back. We'll do that next here on The Score.
The play clock down to 2. They take the handoff. Daniels runs to his left, throws to his left, pass is caught. Touchdown, Commanders. Zacchaeus was left open for the back of the end zone. On 4th down and 2, they cash in for the first score of the game.
Give them options. Daniels. Keeping in trouble, floats one. Oh, Zacchaeus made it happen for 2, and it's an 11-point game.
Yeah, that man does. He does work. Olamide. Olamide. Olamide?
Olamide.
Yeah, Olamide Zaccheaus. I got Zaccheaus down, but Olamide, I look at it twice and I'm like, is it Olamide or is it?
Olamide.
Olamide. Now I'm just saying Olamide.
One of those names where you don't want to look at the name when you're saying it. Yeah, just think it.
Yeah, just think it. Olamide. But anyway, get familiar with him. Olamide Zaccheaus, newly added receiver to the Chicago Bears roster. And look at Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles building a whole roster. Step by step, day by day.
I love that song. This is you open to the show on TGIF.
You know what? I wasn't even thinking about that.
You just rolled right into it.
It just popped into my head like that. Bernstein and Harris with the voice of Layla Rahimi broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers on to hour number three.
That's right. As we broadcast live through the Hyundai Studios.
Yeah.
On the Score. I do want to point out that the nice thing about finding this on the Bears website, because again, the Bears YouTube channel is the best.
It is a deep rabbit hole, which you can fall down at any moment.
It is. And if you listen to us, there's a good chance you should subscribe. I have no problem sending subscribers to the Bears YouTube channel.
There's enough content out here for all of us.
I am a proud subscriber of the Bears YouTube channel. So when I got the information that Olamide Zaccheaus was going to be interviewed, I was like, oh, okay, this is good because more information is better. We've gotten to know a lot of the players that they've signed so far, at least little snippets here and there. But what I was really surprised by was how much he told us about how he was going to fit in this offense. People like this, who you know have multiple skill sets, and he's known as being a willing blocker, you really find out a little bit more about the plan for the run game, for example, for the roster, for how the offense is going to look like. So let's just start with what we knew about him. Dan Weiderer yesterday told us that he knows how to block. That's something he wants to do. So he expanded on it yesterday.
It's very important. It takes everybody. It takes all 11 to run the ball, and even in the pass game as well. Like when somebody catches the ball, just being down, getting down the field to get a block, and it's going to be a staple of just what you see here and what Ben Johnson's trying to build with this offense.
So you see that he talks about the all-player on the field concept when it comes to running the ball. I love that. It takes 11 men to run the ball. I think that that's fantastic because that lets you know. To me, that says downfield blocking. That says support on the edges in a way that maybe we haven't seen before.
Establish.
Given what he did in Washington, do you feel like that might give you a few more answers?
I like what he did in Washington, just going back and looking at it and kind of going game by game. Okay, this is what you did in this game, and then watching some highlights. I went down a rabbit hole, not on the Bears YouTube page, but just on the Zaccheaus content.
Highlight reel?
Yeah, content reservoir, if you will. And that's fine. I like... Here's my thing. I guess more so than any year in the past, I actually trust what the Bears are doing because they've given me no reason not to trust them with Ben Johnson at the helm. He has a longer leash. Ryan Poles didn't have a long leash with me because I've seen the mistakes that he's made over 3 years worth of decisions. But now with Ben Johnson and Dennis Allen having their say, I know that they've been good at specific jobs. The head coaching thing's still questionable, but he can run an offense. Dennis Allen can run a defense. So I'm just going to lean with it, rock with it. Oh, my bad. I'm doing it again. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be quoting things.
Rock with it.
I don't mean to be quoting things. I'm just telling you how I feel watching this Bears team come together. And we're in that no danger zone because nothing bad is going to happen on the field for a few months, several months. So I'm just going to say, okay, that's what y'all want to do. After they got the guys I wanted in free agency, now I sit back and relax.
Oh, what does the draft mean to you?
I'm just kind of sitting back, relaxing, see, surprise me. Because you don't have the same needs you had a week ago.
Expecting yourself to draft a all-time offensive line class, for example. That is not the case.
But if they did that, it wouldn't hurt.
That would be wonderful. I don't know how many people would be protesting that.
Add to what you have. And with Zaccheaus himself, just hearing him talk about things in a calm manner and kind of explain things is great. he was also talking a little bit about his new head coach, who he knows. Everybody knows what Ben Johnson can do as a play caller, right? But he told us how he thinks he will fit in the Ben Johnson offense.
Yeah, I mean, I've always prided myself on being able to move around from the inside and outside. I think primarily I'll be more in the slot. Mm-hmm. But just having the ability to move outside and move around in offense is something I pride myself in.
What about specifically with Ben Johnson? Like, what, as a receiver, what gets you excited about playing in his offense, and what are you kind of excited to learn about him?
Yeah, I think just from afar, obviously, you see what his offenses have done in the past, and you know, just the creativity and the play calls, and just how great the offenses have been and how productive they've been. So I think that's what excites me. And then you also just watch the film and the tape and how hard they play for each other. That's something that's right up my alley. So I'm just excited to get to work and, you know, just build on that.
So again, he's telling you how he sees himself fitting in. That's important as we try to figure out how this is all going to take shape.
I think I like the idea of him specifically because it's different from the other guys you have already in that wide receiver room. He seems like the block first kind of guy who can also make some things happen when called upon in the passing game.
Right. Or, you know, maybe it's a guy who will block at the line of scrimmage, then run out. Right.
I will take anything that keeps Caleb Williams protected. Sign me up.
Is he the slightly upgraded version of Equanimeous St. Brown? I was thinking catch? That. I mean, he could catch, but I think Zacchaeus is better at the actual receiving part of the job than EQ was.
The stats bear that out, right? So, probably.
And that's the detail you're looking for. Perhaps that is where Ben Johnson has another say in the roster. You know, it's the detail of, yes, I still want a guy who can block and be an offensive option, but he needs to be better at X and Y than he does Z. You know, maybe you're seeing those things start to take place as far as him prioritizing the makeup of these players. So I found all of that very helpful. Also, working with Jaden Daniels, I thought was an important piece of this as well. Now, he was asked about Caleb Williams, and the quote is, "The biggest thing I think is that the mental aspect of it for any young quarterback, especially Caleb, he has all the talent you need to be a top-tier quarterback in the league. So a lot of it is just going down to be the mental aspect of it. You know, like just slowing the game down." Good opinion. That's his way of saying things. Yes?
I was going to say, it's easy to slow the game down when you have more time.
Which I think none of us can argue that Jaden Daniels typically had more time to throw the ball than Caleb Williams did. And sometimes he didn't need the more time because Terry McLaurin, utilized in that offense, was more open or whatever the option was for him. Ertz, for example, who had a good year. You know, those when those options are available to you, you're going to succeed more likely than not.
I agree with everything you just said. We've been doing a lot of agreeing lately. I just realized that.
Well, also, I mean, the proof is in the tape. How are you going to argue against what the Commanders did in order to be successful this past season with a rookie quarterback?
I think the most interesting dynamic of Zacchaeus joining the Bears is that he was just with Jaden Daniels, and Caleb Williams is in the same rookie class, and they went 1 and 2 in the draft. And you know what? People are saying I'm crazy for saying Jaden Daniels has been better than Caleb Williams and maybe better than Caleb Williams. We don't know yet, but he definitely is out around the first turn ahead. It's a marathon, not a sprint, but he is off to a much better start to his career than Caleb Williams.
Oh, Bears Twitter, who says Jervon Dexter is better than Jalen Carter, also got mad at me for pointing out that Jalen Carter was good and that he had a very good weekend at the same time that Jaden Daniels did, and both of those guys looked very good.
Some people need to just take a step back and look at the big picture.
I knew what I was saying. People who knew that segment knew what I was saying.
Then who didn't know what you were saying?
I don't know. The reply guys who were like, oh, everybody's going to say this.
I'd never heard that term until today, but I like it.
Oh, it's reply guys. But we're not observing this for social media clicks. It was inarguable that those two had good seasons. Jaden Daniels and Jalen Carter.
Yes.
It is also a fact that the Bears didn't draft either of them and had the chance to.
Also correct.
That's it. That's all we were trying to say. So you look at what Jaden Daniels did. The bar is set for that quarterback class, whether or not you want to admit it. And people like this can offer their observations from experience and can help. And the good news is he's on this team now. But I did really appreciate Nicholas Moriano asking Zacchaeus about his observations about Jaden Daniels.
I think with Jaden, it was a throw in OTAs that he made that really like displayed his arm talent. And obviously in OTAs and training camp, you don't really run around as much. So like I didn't really see that aspect of it until we started playing games. So just how he processed things and, you know, how he developed, he's just so eager to learn and get better, and how consistent he was at being better. That's how I knew, like, he's going to be special and he's going to continue to do great things. And, you know, the biggest thing I think is just, you know, the mental aspect of it for any young quarterback, especially Caleb. You know, he has all the talent that you need to be a top tier quarterback in the league. So a lot of it is just going to be the mental aspect of it and, you know, kind of just slowing the game down.
And there's what he said.
He said top tier, right? He said top tier?
Top tier.
Top tier.
I also was wondering when he was describing it, like if you're watching that in OTAs and you're like, oh, this is going to be good. What confidence that must have given the team that early on to see that and be like, this is our guy.
And to have a play caller out of the gate who knew what to do.
That play caller did a lot to reinvent himself this past season.
Cliff Kingsbury?
Yes.
That whole, when he, sorry, I always have flashbacks when I think of Cliff Kingsbury to when he's asked about the interview with the Bears.
Pause.
It's yeah. It's so telling because you're like, oh, that didn't go well, huh? It's not something you want to talk about because it's like, is that because he didn't want the job or is that because he thought Matt Eberflus was not smart or both?
I think what we've gathered in the reporting since is there was kind of both ways didn't fuel the vibe correctly.
Yeah,
like
it was
like a reciprocal on both ends. Oh, this isn't right.
This isn't a good fit
for whatever reason.
I've heard a lot of Cliff Kingsbury tape over the years. Going back to me remembering when he was on the mic at Texas Tech as the quarterback. And for some reason, for me, I did not interpret it as volatile as everybody else did.
Not volatile. You just understood.
I didn't fill in the pauses for him. I took it for face value.
You also interviewed for the Bears OC job. What was that experience like?
I'm just not going to get into that. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. I could see him just not wanting to get into it.
The question, though, the way he answered it, he could have answered it a bunch of different ways and had that same result. Like, obviously, I didn't get the job or I didn't want the job. However, but the way he paused and said, I'm not going to get into that, like, I'd rather, like, I don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. That's the way it came off.
Not to me. It was game week, too.
But he knew he was going to be asked about the Bears, about interviewing for the Bears job. If he didn't, that means he's not smart or the PR people aren't smart. It's one or the other.
No, I'm sure he was prepared for that. But yeah. I think he...
So what I'm telling you is that was a prepared way to answer the question. Like to let it sit like that.
Yeah, just know, I guess after hearing him on tape for so long, I didn't take it the same way. I didn't take it with any sort of like ill will. I just took it as him not wanting to talk about it.
But I'm not saying it's ill will. I'm just saying the disconnect part that Studs was just talking about makes sense because he's just like, there's really nothing to talk about. It was never going to work. That's how I took it.
We, as a, the station doesn't have one opinion unless six hosts all happen to have, really seven, unless seven hosts all happen to have the same opinion, which is rare.
We all have the same opinion about Matt Eberflus, and it wasn't hindsight because it was still going on when we had the opinion.
There were varying degrees, but what I'm trying to point out is that I did not necessarily, it was not my sources or my information that said Matt Eberflus was afraid of hiring Cliff Kingsbury.
Oh, that particular aspect of it. Okay.
I understand that was respected speculation that I thought is fair in discussion and warranted, especially with Cliff Kingsbury having had head coaching experience, having had high profile OC experience, having worked with Caleb Williams. None of that backed off of that theory. But I just thought it was a lot to I think sometimes people took it out of context from what it was, which was potential speculation.
Okay. So we have a new receiver. We're going to continue to add players. And every time we get the player on the roster, we're going to figure out who they are, what they're about. And I like that we did a little dive on Zaccheaus and trying to understand how he's going to fit into the Ben Johnson offense and how he sees himself in Ben Johnson offense. And having played with Jaden, now playing with Caleb, I like the contrast and compare of it all. So that's good.